Ladies and gentlemen, you know that I'm a very some of you know, some of you late tuner-inners, late joiners on the network may not know this, but you will now, because I'm am a very proud son of Southern California. We get our knocks, we get our slams, we get our share of critical attention. So nothing makes me prouder, nothing makes me happier than to be able to bust my buttons over over yet another area in which Southern California takes the lead. And I'm talking today about the salaries of public officials. Nowhere in these United States are public officials paid more than in the city and county of Los Angeles. And I'm so pleased and happy to be able to say that, because, you know, when they say that people in L.A. don't care, if we don't care, how come we're paying these guys so damn much? The pay of top elected and appointed government officials in Los Angeles City and County has soared by one-third to nearly double in the past 4 years in many cases. Public employees in Los Angeles City and County have beaten inflation by nearly 50%. Some top public sector officials in L.A. are being paid nearly 10 times the average per capita income in the region. Now, you see, when you talk about making the public sector work more like the private sector, we're doing it. That kind of disparity between the top and the average exactly mirrors the private sector. So we're doing it right. L.A., baby. Los Angeles now has the nation's highest paid cadre of top local government officials. The new head of the Metropolitan Transit Authority. Hey, they run our buses. You know, you've got to pay top dollar for a guy to run buses in L.A. He and the superintendent of the school district, both approaching the $400,000 salary of George W. Bush. That's right. George W. Bush, is, in case you forgot, is being paid twice as much as Bill Clinton was. And we got two guys getting almost as much. The head of the buses and the head of the schools. You, of course you'd be proud. You'd be proud, too. Roger Snoble, don't make this up. I'm reading this one. Roger Snoble, the new head of L.A.'s Metropolitan Transit Authority, just in from Dallas, he'll be paid $295,000 a year plus $52,000 in benefits. That's enough to get one of those Dick Cheney heart things put in. He's the highest paid public official in Los Angeles County. Nationally, he's second only to President George W. Bush. Wow. The highest paid official in New York is the head of the schools, who makes $245,000 a year. That's $5,000 less than the head of the L.A. school district. So, yes, ladies and gentlemen, when they say people in L.A. just don't care, I say we don't have to care. We let our dollars care. And now, because I felt that the opening of the program needed a little bit more show business pizzazz. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show.
I just can't figure any earthly reason why. But now it's feeling pretty grim. Mm-hmm. To hang my heart out on this limb. Mm-hmm. Now I realize I wasted something that I cared about, and she's with him. Mm-hmm. I saw her Sunday down by the breakers. She drove right past me, smiled as she rode by. Another girl in love with a dime a dozen guys. It is about loving God.
Table. My dust is still good. I won't dance, don't ask me. I won't dance, don't ask me. I won't dance, madam, with you. My heart won't let my feet do things that they should do. You know what? You're lovely. You know what? You're so lovely. And oh, what you do to me. I'm like an ocean wave that's bumped on the shore. I feel so absolutely stumped on the floor. When you dance, you're charming and you're gentle, especially when you do the continental. But this feeling isn't purely mental. For heaven rest us, I am not asbestos. And that's why I won't dance. Why should I? I won't dance. How could I? I won't dance. Merci beaucoup. I know that music leads the way to romance. So if I hold you in my arms, I won't dance. I won't dance, don't ask me. I won't dance, don't ask me. I won't dance, madam, with you. My heart won't let my feet do things that they want to do. You know what? You're lovely, ring-a-ding-ding. You're lovely, and oh, what you do to me. I'm like an ocean wave that's bumped on the shore. I feel so absolutely stumped on the floor. When you dance, you're charming and you're gentle, especially when you do the continental. But this feeling isn't purely mental. For heaven rest us, I am not asbestos. And that's why I won't dance. I won't dance. I won't dance. Merci beaucoup. That music leads the way to romance. So if I hold you in my arms, I won't dance.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, this is the show for the weekend of July 8th, 2001. Isn't that amazing? No, it's not. Just came right after 2000, just like it's supposed to. From the Le Mail file, talked last week a little bit about the man who figured out that Freon was a good thing to use for A, refrigeration and air conditioning, and B, screwing up the environment. Comes a letter that says, when you burn Freon, you get phosgene, which was called mustard gas, used in World War I. Not a nice thing. This correspondent also questions the comment made last week. I have this one piece of paper here, ladies and gentlemen. I left everything else at home. I forget the name of the man who did discover that you could use Freon for that purpose, but I read you that he inhaled a lungful of it to prove how safe it was. One of my favorite all-time science stunts, like the guy who drank a glass of malathion. This writer says, I also question if he really inhaled a lungful, as this is what some preteen and teenagers used to do with whipped cream. Freon is the propellant they used to use. Emptied the whipped cream. I don't want to tell you how to do this. You get an oxygen starvation high and usually pass out immediately. Can cause brain damage. Well, by the way, a relative of the gentleman in question did also email me to say, yes, it is true. He did invent that contraption to give himself greater mobility out of his wheelchair, and he did strangle in the contraption. So that is a true fact. Freon is, says this correspondent back to him, who is involved in the air conditioning industry. Freon is very heavy compared to air. You can empty it into a bucket and stick your head in and pass out. Ooh, there's also some small danger of frostbite to the surface of the eyeball. Ugh! I don't want to listen to the radio to hear that. On the Sunday British newspaper Alarmometer, you see, the British news media work differently than ours. Our news media scare you every day at 5. 10 things in your kitchen that could kill. Jim has the story with chest tonight at 5. But the British save that for their serious Sunday newspapers. They bring out these very serious stories, also just meant to alarm you. And on the Sunday serious newspaper Alarmometer, this one I think rates a 7 from the Observer of London. Trendy sunglasses with their distinctive hues of green, blue, and red can destroy eyesight and even cause cancer. What could beat that as a lead? You know, you get the trendy thing and you get disease, death thing. British consumer officials are launching a clampdown on sunglasses after tests showed they failed to protect the eye from damaging ultraviolet light, and many cases can increase the likelihood of damage to the eyes from the sun's rays. Tests in Scotland show that 57% of sunglasses failed to meet official standards. The worst sunglasses were the ones with the most fashionable colors, unusual shapes, and those that were particularly small. Expensive sunglasses gave no better protection than cheap ones. Wraparound plastic sunglasses were deemed to offer the most protection. Studies in the United States show excessive UV radiation can cause cataracts in the eye, leading to chronic exposures, can also lead to a non-malignant growth, which can damage eyesight. UV light can trigger cancer in the sensitive skin around the eye. 28 different kinds of glasses were tested, shining light through them in a laboratory to find out how much protection they offered. 1 in 5 let in more than 5% of the most harmful wavelengths. A full 25% failed to comply with their official filter category, and a third were labeled wrongly. Fashion victims, one more time, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. You can either have those fun colors and those fun shapes, or you can save your eyesight. And it's a close one. You know how many what percentage of young Americans already have some hearing loss just from listening to this program too loud? That's the amazing part. On the other hand, British press also offer some sense of relief. Literally, men will no longer have to ditch their tight trousers for fear of killing off the chance to become fathers. For years, men have been advised to wear loose-fitting slacks so as not to overheat their testicles. Sperm is produced at up to 8 degrees centigrade below normal body temperature. The heat generated by tight trousers or underpants was believed to make it harder to manufacture sperm. Now a study by the German Environment Agency has concluded that wearing tight pants is not the reason for falling male fertility around the world. I was just leaving that silence for guesses. Pollutants pumped out by chemical companies is who these people blame. Scientists studied sperm counts in men visiting fertility clinics in 3 German cities and found the average level of sperm was at an all-time low. Average sperm counts in Hamburg have fallen from 40 to 20 million sperm per milliliter over the last 10 years, a level the World Health Organization believes is critical for fertility. Danish and French studies have found similarly low levels, so it's not just karma. Other studies have shown variations in counts between men in Denmark, Scotland, and France, and sperm counts have declined in both East and West Germany. See, in East Germany, they didn't wear tight pants. It was against the rules. Counts there still have dropped to Western levels. The scientists who ran the survey, they're within a German environmental agency, believe the culprits are chemicals used in the manufacture of plastics and pesticides. These mimic the female hormone estrogen. Exposure to high levels of them in the womb, we can't do anything about it now, disrupts the development of male sex organs and could alter the response of tissues to hormones throughout life. It's nature's way of saying, enough of you guys already, isn't it? Ladies and gentlemen, we might have thought, let's put it that way, that with the passage of the George W. Bush tax cut a month ago, that subject had been dealt with and we could now move on with our lives, as we all like to say. That is not the truth. The liberal media, the liberal side of the media, has been full of storm clouds, predictions of storm clouds, most likely coming from the Congressional Budget Office, which is supposed to be saying in August that the surplus is not what they thought it was back in March. I believe the exact quote is going to be, "What surplus?" Because, of course, the economy is slowing down. When the economy is slowing down, there's less tax income to the government that was going to be used for the surplus that was going to be used for the tax cut. Get it? So there's that. And then a conservative group with close ties to the White House has begun lobbying for bigger tax cuts. Americans for Tax Reform, headed by Grover Norquist, a confidant of key administration officials, called Bush's tax cut substantial, but said it's not enough to appreciably reduce individuals' burden of paying for government, because it's all backloaded, you see. It's all doesn't happen until we're all dead. So he wants more now, and the liberals want less now. You got that? Are we clear on that, ladies and gentlemen? And, how hot does the property have to be, ladies and gentlemen? This is Southern California. Not only do we pay our public officials more than any place else in the known world, we got Hef. Hugh Hefner has purchased a house on Holmby Hills for $4.5 million. Real estate sources said. The Playboy magazine founder, who lives in the nearby Playboy mansion, bought the house as an investment. He'd been watching it for a while, says Dick Rosenzweig of Playboy Enterprises, and there was a point where he thought it was a good investment. Originally listed in May of 1999 at about $6.2 million. Wow, Hef got it for $4.5. Moved in at the right time. The 5,500-square-foot house built in the 1950s has five bedrooms and a large living room with a bar overlooking the pool and its 1.3-acre grounds. The house also has an 8-car garage and additional parking, but Hefner's not planning to turn the property into a parking lot for the 6-acre mansion, whose nighttime soirees sometimes draw more than 1,000 guests. 1,000 guests, he doesn't have room for me. Isn't that interesting? Hef is back, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know if you know this. Since the marriage blew up, Hef is so back. All the young Hollywood stars are hanging out there. Well, 1,000 of them. He's not using his new property for parking, but he hasn't yet decided exactly how he will use it, according to his spokesman. Who's fooling whom, ladies and gentlemen? I think we all know how Hef plans to use his property.
Go with the bubba. I'm sophisticated, cause I'm living my life like a good homo sapien. But all around me, everybody's multiplying, and I'm walking around like flies, man. So I'm no better than the animals sitting in the cages in the zoo, man. Cause compared to the flowers and the birds and the trees, I am an ape, man. Think I'm so educated and I'm so civilized, cause I'm a strict vegetarian. But with the overpopulation and inflation and starvation and the greedy politician, I don't feel safe in this world no more. I don't wanna die in a nuclear war. I wanna sail away to a distant shore and make like an ape man. Spiders and flies, I am an ape man. Yolo de la 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 la. Yeah. motor traffic rumble. Boom, boom. Well, give me half a chance, and I'd be taking off my clothes and living in the jungle, yes I will. Because the only time that I feel at ease is swinging up and down in a coconut tree. Oh, what a life of luxury to be like an ape man. I'm an ape man, I'm an ape man, no, I'm an ape man. But I'm a king of man, I'm a voodoo man, no, I'm an ape man. I look out the window, but I can't see the skies. The air pollution. Yeah. In my ape man world, I'm an ape man, I'm an ape man, no, I'm an ape man. Why did I say this? And I'm a King Kong man, I'm a voodoo man, no, I'm an ape man. I don't feel safe in this world no more. I don't wanna die in a nuclear war. I wanna sail away.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, this is Up to Here. Up to Here, CPR's once-over, not-so-likely, of the events and people that fly over and under the radar of the week's news. I'm Milton Getzler in Washington. This week, word leaked out of the Bush administration that HHS Secretary Tommy Thompson was preparing to issue a new regulation declaring that unborn children would now be eligible for medical care under a federal program designed to assist poor women and children. Unborn children, a supporter of the move said, are children too. While the new rule outraged pro-choice critics, for some on the other side, it's just the beginning. CPR's very special correspondent Aviva Schlorman spoke this week to the head of a new proactive organization, the National Association for the Advancement of Unborn People.
Elizabeth Belchase is a child of the civil rights movement. Her father, Andy, marched in Selma, was a freedom rider in Mississippi before becoming executive vice president of Revlon. For Elizabeth, who trained as an attorney in Chicago and now lives here in Washington, unborn rights is a civil rights issue.
Aviva, we take the HHS secretary seriously when he says that UPs,
meaning unborn people,
that they have the right to federally supported medical care. I think we're at a stage where we're just beginning to discover just how many rights the unborn person really has.
Elizabeth, when you say rights, I think the first thing that comes to my mind is the right to vote.
Spoken like a true NAAU peer, Aviva.
Actually, the only organization I belong to is a Thoreau-influenced gardening club. But
we believe that the reason this issue has been ignored for so long is very simple. Unborn people represent potentially one of the largest voting blocks in our country.
Mm.
Can you think of what it would go through a politician's mind if he had to defend an anti-unborn voting record to...
Yeah, and here we come to it, don't we, Miss Belchase? To a what? There couldn't be campaign meetings with groups of UPs or even television...
Or even television campaign commercials. And wouldn't that be a bad thing to have an entire part of the voting population who couldn't see those? Seriously, Miss Schlorman, there are already very sophisticated ways of communicating sounds to unborn people. You know that when they get the vote, a lot more research money is going to be devoted to communicating with them, if for no other reason than to be able to tabulate their votes. And that's a good thing.
What other rights are on your agenda for those awaiting birth?
Well, vested rights under federal and state entitlement programs, unemployment, disability, fair housing, small business loan guarantees.
Oh, now, surely, Miss Belchase, no fetus in his right mind is going to be applying for an SBA loan to open a sunglass hut.
Well, first, as you may have noticed, we refer to our constituents as unborn people, not fetuses or children. The first term trivializes their existence. The second term politicizes it. It gets involved in the whole abortion discussion. What they are, bottom line, is persons. Little, unborn persons who happen to live inside other persons. And whether or not they choose to exercise one or another of their rights is irrelevant to the issue that they should have those rights. I mean, if I decide to stay quiet for a weekend, I don't necessarily thereby lose my right to free speech.
I assume that's a hypothetical.
Of course.
But aren't all these proposals for unborn people's rights really a way of setting a precedent trap for abortions? I mean, if these people have all these new rights, then it would follow that surely you can't abort them.
Ms. Schloman, all I can tell you is we get no funding, direct or indirect, from the pro-life movement. We respect them. I hope they respect us, but we're not as interested in the consequences that may or may not flow from reform than in the idea of social justice itself. After all, did my father's peers in the civil rights movement stop to consider that what they were doing would eventually pave the way for Oprah and Bryant Gumbel? I don't think so.
Well, that leads with almost uncanny continuity to my next question. Your organization's name bears a marked similarity to...
to the NAACP. I've heard that.
And to the NCAA. But principally, yes, to the NAACP. Have you gotten any reaction from them?
We have. The attorneys are trying to work it out as we speak. I don't think, legally speaking, that there's any more similarity between our names than between, let's say, the American Medical Association and the American Rifle Association.
Just one word.
Just one word.
What about the right to drive a car?
Well, in every state I know about, it's a privilege, not a right.
But you do advocate an unborn person's right to sue.
Oh, we certainly do. Whether it's the manufacture of an ultrasound scanner that may zap a UP with an overdose of radiation or a mother who smokes crack cocaine. Mm. Of course, the only person who's really in a position to have speedy recourse to a legal remedy is the unborn person, him or herself. As a matter of fact, I mean, the only right that we really haven't taken a position on yet is the unborn person's right to die. That's, to us, that's a tricky one.
Your father marched in pursuit of a dream.
Mm-hmm.
What's your dream?
Well, his dream is now a lipstick that looks wet for up to 18 hours, but my dream is a world in which unborn people can take their rightful place, where a person is treated equally, regardless of race, creed, national origin, or state of birthfulness. What we have to acknowledge, Aviva, as a nation, is that for far too long we have been a birthist society, and changing the laws is just part of the larger job of changing our hearts.
Elizabeth Belchase, thanks for spending this time with us.
I regarded it more as an investment. Thank you.
I'm Aviva Schlorman in Washington.
The approach of baseball's All-Star Game is a bittersweet time for commentator Bixby Knowles.
I shoved my gloved arm halfway up a hepatitic calf this week. I came face to face with myself. Mortality stared at me like a tourist through that animal's eyes, and I knew summer was half over. All-star games mean that here in Wyoming. They signal it's time to start to prepare for fall. There are sheep to inoculate against pink ear, swine that need their teeth cleaned. When the all-star teams are announced, while other fans think of green outfields, I think of a goat that must be fitted with a truss before the first snow. Plenty of time for joy next summer. This one's almost over.
Bixby Knowles is a large animal poet and free verse veterinarian who lives in Cody, Wyoming. He comes to us from member station KIOU. And for this week, you're up to here. We had help this week from the Clevenger Foundation for coverage of stories the Clevenger Foundation really likes. I'm Milton Getzler, inviting you to join us the next time we get up to here. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, O.J. is back. Yes, indeed, if you were watching the Fox News Channel this week, and if you were, why? Why? You saw that O.J. Simpson called in live on the air to remonstrate with a commentator or anchor regarding comments about an interview that O.J. Simpson gave to The New Yorker. Not even an interview. He invited a New Yorker reporter to hang around with him for a while, a few days, Pat Jordan. And as I say, O.J. Then called in to Fox to correct the record of the people who were quoting the article that quoted O.J. Amazing quotes, by the way, in the article. A friend of Simpson's, who's discounting the similarity between O.J.'s current girlfriend, Christy Prouty, and O.J.'s late wife, says, quote, this is a friend of Simpson's talking, quote, O.J. was really in love with Nicole, but he doesn't care enough about Christy to kill her, unquote. It's a quote from a friend of O.J.'s. So who needs Hungarians? He speaks about his daughter. She's her mom, quote, she's her mom all over again. She's got those German genes. Her grandmother, my wife, now my daughter, those bitches will wear you out, unquote. He says, I never got hugs before. Now the public shows me so much love. Women are my biggest defenders. It's that bad boy syndrome. Now girls chase me. This is O.J. in The New Yorker, ladies and gentlemen. And, of course, the quote that got the most attention in the other media that got picked up elsewhere, quote, I love the way Nicole looked. If I saw her on that sidewalk right now, I'd pull over and hit on her if she had a different head, unquote. What's going on? O.J.'s new attorney, Yale Galanter, in the interview, kind of explains. O.J. Simpson is the most misunderstood person on the planet. Galanter has a grand plan, he says. I want people to get to know the real O.J. What a great family man, father, and neighbor he is. I envision a day when O.J. will again be a celebrity spokesman in the mainstream of commerce. They forgave, Americans are very forgiving. They forgave Marv Albert and Frank Gifford. Not that I think O.J. did anything that needs to be forgiven. Personally, I'm humbled that O.J. put his trust in me. My parents are walking on cloud nine because O.J. picked me to be a spokesman, unquote, Yale Galanter. Well, as I say, O.J. called into Fox News this week. One of the comments in the article is that he's getting even in this very early stage of the grand plan, he's getting offers to do a kind of an Inside Edition show in Europe, which he turned down because he wants to be closer to his kids because, as Yale Galanter points out, he's such a good father. He's also, O.J. also hinted in his Fox News telephone conversation that he's gotten an offer, possibly from HBO. I sure hope so. To be a commentator on court cases, which HBO does so much of, as you know. My favorite rumor, however, was not renewed this week. It was the one that when he moved down to Florida, he wasn't just doing it to avoid the ability for people who had legal judgments against him to attach his income, but that he had gotten an offer to do talk radio on a South Florida radio station. Apparently that broadcast is only... can only be heard. It can't be heard in South Florida, as it turns out. It can only be heard here.
Mark
AM 1350, South Florida's hot talk. And it's the juice dropping another hour on you. It's our open line hour. Anybody can call and talk about anything except the civil trial. Gotta say this, that China Reliever case just gets stranger every day. I mean, I was just talking about it with Casey over in the newsroom. And I'll tell you one thing, no knock on the lady, but I hope nothing bad happened to her. But, you know, that's not a woman to wreck a congressional career over. You know what I'm saying? I mean, at least, you know, be blonde, at least bring some booty to the table, you know? But I do understand what Congressman Condon is going through, you know. One minute you're a respected government official or a movie star and corporate spokesman. The next minute, the media just turn on you and start treating you, you know, as if you didn't set the Russian record for the Buffalo Bills or in the congressman's case that, you know, you didn't write any kind of bill that was good legislation for the people. I mean, Michael Jackson lives with this every day. You know, he can't be seen even fondling a child in public without some very nasty stuff being written about him and printed about him. But, you know, anyway, we got a lot of calls on the board. Tomorrow, by the way, we got my pal Cedric Rodriguez. He's one of the best limo drivers in all of South Florida. He's got some great stories. If you folks are nice to him, the old juice man may just luck into a year's worth of free limousine service. So word to the wise time there. Hey, this is wild. On the line two is my own lawyer, Yale Galanter. Hey, man, how you doing?
Juice, I cannot believe that you're able to devote 3 hours a day to this show between you being an adoring and an amazing father to both your children and maintaining one hell of a profile on the golf course.
Hey, no, they're just public courses. Yeah. No big deal. It's not like I'm playing against people who have a choice in the deal.
Yeah, no, but still, anyway, O.J., I know you've got some hard feelings about the New Yorker piece.
Well, look, Yale, it's like I tell you in private when we're on the meter. I'm used to this. One of those media guys, you know, pretends to be interested in the truth, and then, like Jack Nicholson says, they can't handle the truth, you know, and they have to go back to the same old, yeah. You know, because, yeah, you know, when yeah. I said I could fall for a woman look like Nicole all over again if she had a different head, you know, the very last thing in the world I was thinking about was Nicole's head, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, of course, LJ, you're too busy being for my money, which... In fairness, is your money.
Yeah, well, which, if you ask him, is Frank Goldman's money. But go ahead.
Well, you're too busy being the best damn father on the face of the planet after what you've been through.
Well, you know better than anybody else. I could be doing this show nationally syndicated. We could take this show national tomorrow if I wanted to, you know, spend less time with the kids.
Yeah, well, Juice, I want to repeat on the air what I've told you in my office since you've already been charged for it.
Yeah.
Richard M. Nixon came back from being forced to resign the presidency.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can certainly come back from...
Mm-hmm. From having done nothing, you know, I think that's going to be the name of my autobiography, Come Back From Nothing. What do you think?
Well, what I think, O.J., mm-hmm. is that every network on the planet will be clamoring for the rights to that book year after next.
Well,
I'm sure your listeners agree you're going to be bigger than you ever were because now you got the nice guy look,
yeah.
But you also got
the bad boy image. But now, Yale, you got any thoughts on Congressman Condit before we take a break?
Well, see, I think he's got a harder job coming back than you, even if he really did nothing.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
before all this started to happen, he was not a beloved persona. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to make comparisons.
Hey, are they odious or what?
But I think that's a tough road, for handling that.
Well, you'd charge full price,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, I have to.
Yeah.
You know, rough job.
Well.
Anyway, Juice, great show. Can't wait to hear the calls on the other side of the break.
Okay, Yale, thanks. As my lawyer, Yale Galanter, if I call him the best damn attorney in the universe, he'd probably get mad and threaten to sue me, but it's a fact. Today in history, on this date in 1994, my preliminary hearing began. Stick around, we got a lot more conversation. It's hot and humid. 1-800-JUICE-ME. Get involved. You're spitting out the pits with the juice.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, if you've been a long-time listener to this broadcast, we believe that men have monopolized the national conversation for far too long. And so it is that we invite the women to join the discourse and give and get it said on issues of public importance. And there's no better opportunity to hear what the women of today have to say than the chat segment of America's Beauty Pageants. And so, in a tribute to our most recent new affiliate, WAMU in Washington, here's the chat segment from the Miss Virginia Pageant.
Okay, let's get started. Leanne Sharon, Miss Hampton Roads. On several occasions in the past, you have participated in study abroad programs. Does any single experience stand out most in your mind as you think about these opportunities?
Yes, actually my junior semester, I got to spend the whole semester in Spain, and I studied actually at the University of Seville. All of my classes were in Spanish with the natives, and the teachers spoke Spanish, so it was a wonderful experience. Not only did I get more fluent in Spanish, but I really learned the importance of being able to communicate with people from all different backgrounds and all walks of life.
How have you become active in educating our society on the precautionary measures that can help prevent strokes?
Actually, I've been speaking to many senior groups and civic organizations, educating them and advocating the importance of volunteerism, writing to legislators. But I think what stands out in my mind the most is I had the opportunity recently to speak at the Chesapeake Conference Center at TalkFest 2001, and I actually got to speak on nationally syndicated radio show with Ken Hamblin about stroke, and I hope that I impacted thousands of Americans. So that would be the most exciting thing I've done for strokes so far, but
Thank you, Leanne. Jennifer Pitts, Miss Northern Virginia. You are a second-year law student. Is there a particular specialty that you plan to pursue?
Absolutely. I have chosen the field of child advocacy law and public interest work because of my passion for children and being a voice for someone who cannot speak for themselves. Great.
Many colleges today are adding a required community service component to their curriculum. Do you think that community service should be required of all students, either in high school or college?
Absolutely, without a doubt. Actually, 9 out of 10 people who are asked to volunteer will volunteer, but unfortunately, only about half of our population actually volunteers. If students are introduced to volunteering at an early age, they will continue these activities later in life.
Thank you, Jennifer. Hello, Paige Juracek, Miss Central Virginia. Now, how were you selected to serve as an ambassador to the model United Nations in the Netherlands?
Well, back in high school, Providence Day School, where I went, was one of four schools in the United States selected to go to the Model United Nations Conference in The Hague, Netherlands. And my group selected me to be the ambassador to Bangladesh, which was a country I knew very little about. But after studying it for the year and giving speech about it, I knew quite a lot about it.
Great. Paige, with our youth being so technologically oriented today, do you think the way to increase voter participation for the future is to allow and encourage e-voting?
Well, I orchestrated the largest national youth e-vote with the help of the University of Virginia and the Center for Governmental Studies this year. Over 36,000 students in the state of Virginia voted, and I think it was an amazing experience for all of the kids who got to vote, and they actually picked George Bush for president, so they picked the one that the adults did as well, and I think it was an amazing experience for all of them.
Absolutely. Thank you, Paige. Megan Shanley, Miss Hampton Holidays Festival. What is the one way that you think parents can build positive self-esteem in their children?
I think the simple act of respecting your child. The smallest thing, such as listening to a child and showing them that what they have to say really does mean something if they're willing to put in the work to put in a respectful way. By teaching them to respect the world will respect them. That simple act of just listening and showing your child that whatever they have to say is important if they're willing to work hard enough to put it into a respectful way.
Great. Thank you, ladies. You all did a wonderful job. Well, that's it.
And be sure to say hola to the natives. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Le Show. The program will return next week at this same time. Isn't that wild? Over these same stations, even wilder, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the Armed Forces Network on shortwave. Remember that? at WBCQ The Planet, 7.415 megahertz, and on your computer. Remember those whenever you want it at two distinct locations, www.kcrw.com and www.harryshearer.com. And it would be just like getting to hang out at Hef's if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Do you know how many bus rides you could get for $400,000? Maybe a couple hundred. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless.